Hey guys, welcome back to Fiction Fixation.
We're your hosts. I'm Courtney.
And I'm Rose.
And this week we're going to be recapping the 1999 romance thriller Cruel Intentions, starring Sarah Michelle Gellar, Ryan Phillippe, Reese Witherspoon, and Selma Blair.
1999. Holy cow.
Yeah. That Y2K energy, man.
This movie was the epitome of edgy in the late 90s.
It was. This is honestly every parent's worst nightmare.
Yeah, for sure.
You don't want your children acting like this.
Ryan Phillippe, he was the it boy at the time. I remember I was obsessed with him.
And he was married to Reese Witherspoon.
They actually had already been dating when they filmed this movie. So they were dating. They'd been dating for like 2 years already.
Yeah. And then we have Selma Blair, and we see Selma Blair and Reese Witherspoon in another movie together. We see them in Legally Blonde together.
Because in this movie, Selma Blair and Reese Witherspoon don't have any scenes together.
No, they don't.
And then we have, oh my goodness, Sarah Michelle Gellar, the vampire slayer.
Sarah Michelle Gellar is the vampire slayer, not Buffy. Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Yes.
Do you know how many times I saw her being terrible in this movie? And I'm like, Buffy, no.
No, Buffy, stop.
Why are you being so mean?
I definitely want to set up the setting because I think New York City is kind of a character here.
Honestly, you have an unhealthy love affair with New York City, all parts of New York City, the Upper East Side, the Upper West Side, the Lower East Side, the Lower West Side, Midtown, Uptown, Downtown, the Bronx, Queens, anything that has to do with New York City, Rose is like, love.
Love. Well, it is a character on its own because usually cities have cultures as a city, but New York City has cultures in sections. Like New York City has multiple boroughs, right? Manhattan is one of them. And Manhattan has so many little cultures tucked away into little pockets. One culture that is well known is the culture of the Upper East Side.
The best way we can really describe that culture is uppity and snobby. I'm too good for you, peasant.
Yes. Ivory Towers. The Upper East Side is where the richest of the richest in New York City live.
Yes.
And if you've seen Gossip Girl, if you've seen any teen dramas that are about rich white kids, that's essentially what the vibes are in this movie.
Yeah, you just have a whole bunch of rich white kids with not enough parental supervision. Mm-hmm. The two siblings that this movie sort of centers around, we have Sebastian and Catherine. Sebastian is played by Ryan Phillippe. Catherine is played by Sarah Michelle Gellar. They are step siblings. Their parents are unhappily married and both away on separate ventures at this time.
There's always this dark energy cast over the young, rich youth. What is that about? You know, it's almost like, remember how I said once that it's almost like they have to create their own suffering because they have nothing to complain mm-hmm. about. They have everything. And so they have to literally orchestrate drama and suffering just to suffer. It's almost like suffering is like part of our DNA. Like we want to suffer low key.
Suffering is part of the human experience.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, isn't that an interesting concept? Look at us. I'm sorry. Is this philosophy fixation?
Maybe. But you know what? I'm not saying that you have to be happy if you're rich. I'm just saying that we deserve the opportunity to see how miserable we can mm-hmm. be.
Yeah. Because it's always rich people telling us like money can't buy you happiness. It's like, okay, Kathy, let me figure that out for myself. There are some lessons in life that we should just all figure out on our own.
I just don't see myself sobbing over a chai latte in a room full of plants that somebody else waters while somebody else cleans my house. I don't see it. It doesn't click for me.
But you know what? Prove us wrong, please.
Prove me wrong. Yeah, I'm, you know what? I am nothing if not logical, and I'm willing to admit when I'm wrong. So prove me wrong.
Cash app us, okay? At Fiction Fixation.
Yeah.
We need to make that immediately. Because mm-hmm. it's not a real Cash App.
Someone's going to Cash App request us for $5. Anyways.
Sebastian and Catherine, again, they're step siblings. There is a really dark energy around these two from the very first scene. It feels sinister. It feels dark.
Yeah. But also, let's say what's actually going on here. Mm-hmm. There's this faux incestuous thing going on between the two of them, okay?
It's uncomfortable to watch because, again, they are step-siblings. Although we don't know when their parents got married, because I do think it's different if you grow up as a child with someone. I think it's really creepy to see them in a sexual way. But if your parents just married someone when you were a late teenager, like, I think that's a little different.
Yeah, like if your parents got married when you were 15 or 16 years old, that's different. If your parents got married when you were 5 or 6, that's a whole other ball game, bro. But they touch all over each other, they kiss each other, and it is disturbing.
These are teenagers, okay? These are late teenagers. They're still in high school. They haven't graduated high school yet.
At this point, I want to be like, I need an adult. Okay. I need an adult in this household so fucking bad right now.
It's really uncomfy. So essentially every scene where Sebastian and Catherine are having a conversation, there's this creepy sexual tension. And the movie doesn't try to not make it creepy. It's creepy on purpose. Like, the movie is trying to make you uncomfortable. In the very first scene, Sebastian is essentially screwing over his therapist because he can.
Yeah, he is being very forward with his therapist, and he is definitely crossing some boundaries with his therapist. And it turns out that he has fucked his therapist's daughter and then posted nude pictures of her on the internet.
He placed the naked picture of the therapist's daughter on a fake cover of the therapist's book. And so it was like just extra level of cruelty, because it wasn't enough to release these naked pictures. He also wanted to like ruin the therapist's career too, ruin her image.
It was just an extra fuck you.
Why did he do that? Why did he hate the therapist?
He says she was overcharging.
He did it because she charged him too much.
I honestly think it's because he was bored. I think he was bored and he wanted to cause problems. But you know what? Sebastian's not the only one that is fucking awful, because meanwhile, you have Catherine, who is weaseling her way in to Cecile, a new girl, weaseling her way into Cecile's good graces and her mother's good graces, because Catherine's ex-boyfriend dumped her and Cecile had one date with him. And she's like, oh, it's obviously this whore's fault. I must ruin her life.
Yeah, Catherine was dating a guy and that guy broke up with her because he was interested in another girl. There are multiple people in this movie that are interested in Cecile, who's played by Selma Blair. And Selma Blair's character in this movie is another level of uncomfortable, because Selma Blair's character is a 17-year-old who acts like she's 5 years old. Cecile, she will wear a skirt and then just have her legs open without realizing that people could see her underwear. Like, she just seems so, like, what is the word?
She's just a little ditzy.
They really played up the ditzy character for her in a way that was just comical.
Also, infantilizing women was sort of like a kink.
It was, you're right. It was 100% infantilizing her, because the whole goal of the movie is to corrupt her. And she's not the only one that this movie is going to corrupt. Catherine's new side quest becomes to become friends with Cecile and then corrupt Cecile so that she is no longer virginal and appealing to Catherine's ex-boyfriend.
Meanwhile, Sebastian's new side quest becomes, I must corrupt. All the side quests are corruption in this movie, by the way. Sebastian's side quest becomes, I must corrupt Reese Witherspoon's character, Annette. Annette was in 17 magazine. She had written this article about purity culture and how she doesn't believe that teenagers are capable of feelings such as love and the maturity in which to make the decisions to have sex. And she believes that in order to have sex, you must be in love and you must be mature, and that teenagers are just not mature enough to have those deep feelings or to make those decisions. Therefore, she's made the decision to wait until she's married and older to have sex.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that she felt the need to publish that, but maybe it was like part of her college essay or something. Like, maybe she wanted that on her resume, like, published an article in 17 magazine about staying a virgin.
Good for her. Like, you know what? Stick to your convictions, girly pop. I love that for you.
So Sebastian sees this article that sweet, virginal, blonde Annette has published in 17 magazine. And he realizes that Annette is also the daughter of the new headmaster at Sebastian's school. And this perpetual edgelord who just wants to be the darkest, edgiest boy around, he decides, I need to corrupt this girl. I need to seduce her, get her in bed, and then I'm going to be a legend.
Like seduce the unseducible.
Seduce the unseducible. Right, because we're led to believe that Ryan Phillippe's character, Sebastian, is this like Don Suave. Is that what it's called, Don Suave? I feel like it's something else. Rico Suave.
Rico Suave. I don't know who either, I don't know who Don or Rico are. So
I don't know either, but I know it's Rico Suave. But yes, so we're led to believe that Sebastian's character is just like this irresistible young man who just is able to seduce anyone and everyone. It has ran through the elite of the Upper East Side that he has this reputation. But you know what my question is, Courtney? He mm-hmm. seems to be doing everything for the lore and his reputation, but I never see him hanging out with the cool kids. Like the only friend we see he has is a boy who's gay, who in the, you know, in 1999, like that wasn't cool.
Yeah. And so also we need to go ahead and put a major warning here about the terminology they use in this movie. Listen, okay, we are going to forgive the movie a tiny bit. Listen, 25 years later, if this movie got remade and used the exact same language, all of these actors would be canceled.
It is so cringy to watch sometimes. And sometimes I think to myself, like, could they go back and edit this out? And then I think, no, it's history. Like, we don't have to be proud of our history.
Yeah.
Like, we just have to acknowledge it, that this is how people behaved in the early 2000s.
Yeah. And I think that it's important to not edit it out so people can be like, okay, listen, this is how we talked as late as 1999, you know, 2002, mm-hmm. 2000, whatever.
Right.
This was acceptable. This was like a mainstream movie that was put out there. This was in theaters.
Right.
And this was okay. This wasn't even said like in context of hate speech in the movie.
Exactly. It was said as like a cool thing that just kids say, that the cool kids say.
Yeah.
And you're so right. It's important to have it in there so that we can question what we're saying now. What are we saying now that 20 years from now, we're going to look back and be like, oof, that was not okay. But that's the point. You grow and you learn. You do the best you can with what you know.
Yeah. But moving on from that. So right now we have these two corruption quests going on. We have Catherine's corruption quest of Cecile, and then we have Sebastian's corruption quest of Annette. Sebastian and Catherine actually took it one step further with Annette, and they made a bet on it. Of course they did, because making bets on stuff in movies and books in 1999 was the edgy thing to do.
Right.
Catherine says, if you're not able to seduce and sleep with her, I get your car. And Sebastian has a really fancy car that he loves. And he's like, okay, what do I get? And Catherine's like, you get me.
Catherine seems to believe, and I think there's evidence to support this, that Sebastian is extremely frustrated that he's never been able to have sex with her. And Catherine has always kind of lured this over Sebastian's head. And it does seem like she has some control over him just because he desires her sexually, even though he pretends like they are equally independent of each other.
To be fair, Catherine also likes to definitely grind on him a little bit. She likes to lead him on a lot. Obviously, he's a willing participant in this. He knows that's not going further.
Yeah.
But she definitely likes to be faux incestuous with him. And you know what? It begs to question whether or not Catherine has a therapist.
Right. Well, Sebastian had a therapist and it didn't seem to work. So I don't know about that. And also, you know what? When someone is a narcissist, the worst thing they could do is go to therapy, because they just learn how to manipulate people better. And I think that's what happened with Sebastian. Like, he went to therapy and then he came out knowing how to manipulate better. And he tested his manipulation with his therapist's daughter.
And it worked.
Mm-hmm.
Now that both Catherine and Sebastian have their wager, they both have their goals, their marks. Mm-hmm. They start in on their quest. We have Catherine who goes in to corrupt Cecile. Catherine and Cecile are having a little picnic in Central Park. We have Cecile, who's dressed in proper picnic attire. And then we have Catherine, who's dressed like she's a mistress at a funeral.
Yes, for sure. She's wearing the big black hat and the black sunglasses, and she's dressed all in black.
Yeah, and it's weird. And I'm like, what the fuck?
It is weird. There's such a contrast between Cecile, who is infantilized for kink, really, is the only explanation. And then we have Catherine, who's just so overly sexual.
And it is uncomfortable, the contrast between the two.
It is uncomfortable.
And we have Cecile, who's like being a petulant little child about how I've never even gotten to first base. Mm-hmm. Catherine says, not even with your girlfriends. Cecile says, no, that's gross. Of course not.
Catherine convinces Cecile that it's totally normal to make out with your girlfriends. It's just girly things.
Just girly things to make out with your friends. It's fine.
It's like this was written by a man, you know? Like a man was like, how do girls learn how to kiss? I'm sorry, is that how boys learn how to kiss? Do they practice on their bros? Because I don't think that's how it happens.
Catherine's like, okay, don't be a prude. Come here and kiss me. So she kisses her, just lips. Cecile's like, oh my God, that was nothing. And Catherine's like, yeah, it was nothing. And then Catherine explains to Cecile, now we're going to use tongue. And she explains to her French kissing. And then they do that. And okay, this really bothers me is when they show the spit, they show the string of spit. And I'm like, ew, ew.
Yeah. So Cecile is, again, very immature, giving little girl energy, even though she's 17 or 18. She has a music teacher, and she told Catherine that she really wants this guy. She really wants the music teacher. Yeah. And so I'm thinking like, oh, this is great for Catherine, because Catherine's goal was to get Cecile away from her ex. So this should work out good. She should be pushing Cecile towards the music teacher, who, by the way, just for context, the music teacher is also a young adult.
He is a young adult, but I think he's also an adult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably like 20 something.
Yeah, so like he's not a teenager, but he's also not like 40. And so Cecile says how, you know, she kind of has feelings for her music teacher. You would think that Catherine would be like, yes, love it. Let's go with that. And Catherine does love it. But Catherine's also not really content to just let Cecile be happy. Catherine wants to burn everything to the ground.
Do you know what I think it is? I think Catherine wants everyone to want her. So it seems like Catherine wants Cecile to be attracted to her. She wants Cecile to want her.
Yes. But you know, Cecile's not gay though.
She's not, but I mean, I don't think Cecile knows what she is, but
I'm pretty sure Cecile's not gay. I honestly think that Cecile is pretty straight, but I don't think she's had any real human, like romantic human connection, like physical connection ever.
Yeah.
So I think that that one kiss she shared with Catherine was just like, woo. It gave her a lot of tingles, even though I don't think she's genuinely attracted to Catherine.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we have Sebastian. He has decided, because it's summertime, to head on over to his aunt's estate because he knows that sweet virginal blonde girl, Annette, is staying with his aunt while her parents sell their house in Kansas.
His aunt obviously has never heard a single thing about Sebastian's reputation, because not even 2 seconds after Annette and Sebastian meet, the aunt just fucks off into the house and leaves them alone.
Sebastian is laying it on thick with Annette. And I have to say this, right? Because we are told that Sebastian seduces people. But the way he talks to people, it literally makes my skin crawl. I remember it making my skin crawl in 1999, but it makes my skin crawl even more now.
I don't find a single thing attractive about Sebastian.
He's very off-putting. It's definitely the performance, and I think it's intentional. I think he intentionally wants to make you uncomfortable. Because honestly, if someone's trying to manipulate you, one of the greatest tools they can have is to set you off kilter. And the easiest way to set someone off kilter is to make them uncomfortable.
There's nothing attractive to me about Sebastian. Not his shit-eating little face, not his, like, honestly, here's the thing. I feel like everything about Sebastian screams, bitch, run.
Yeah.
I'm just saying my survival instincts are way up here, okay? If something feels off, bitch, run.
I think maybe Annette felt it because Annette doesn't seem to be buying his charm.
She doesn't. And you can tell right away that Sebastian is like, what is going on here? Annette even says, I was warned about you.
Yes. So Annette reveals that someone wrote her a letter and told her all about Sebastian and how he goes around seducing girls and how he's cruel and he doesn't care about anyone. And Annette is very smart. And she's like, of course, I would be the ultimate trophy for this fuckboy. There is no way I'm going to let him get in my pants.
Yeah. And Sebastian is like, what? Lies?
Never. Me?
Cool. Would say such a thing.
Well, that's the question too, because who did you think it was at first?
I thought it was his stepsister.
Yeah, I did too. I immediately thought it was Catherine. It would make sense, right? Because Catherine wants to sabotage, but it's someone that Annette knows. It's like a mutual friend of theirs. So Sebastian is like, who is our mutual friend?
Yeah. And so he immediately goes to this one guy that they both know. It's a childhood friend of Annette's, and then it's a classmate of Sebastian's. Mm-hmm. Sebastian immediately is like, it's him. It has to be him. He's the only one that fits. And Sebastian, instead of just being like, hey man, did you happen to tell Annette that I was a fuckboy?
Yeah.
Instead of being a sane, rational human about it, he orchestrates this whole elaborate thing to get this guy in bed with another guy to take pictures and threaten to ruin his life.
And it's not until Sebastian corners this mutual friend of him and Annette's and is like, why did you send her the letter? And the guy's like, dude, it wasn't me. And Sebastian's like, oh, well, anyway, I need you to do something for me because I have these pictures of you hooking up with the guys. So now you have to do what I say.
And so essentially this poor guy, all right, who just wanted to kiss boys, all right, that's all he wanted to do.
In secret.
All he wanted to do was kiss boys without his dad disowning him.
Right. Isn't that what we all want at the end of the day? It's a universal experience.
If you want to kiss boys, kiss boys. Shit. But this poor kid ends up talking to Annette and being like, you know what, Sebastian? He's not that bad. You know, he's always looked out for me. What the fuck?
I found this scene to be really heartbreaking because essentially the guy is not the one who wrote the letter, but Sebastian sends him to casually catch up with Annette. He takes her on a walk and he starts casually bringing up Sebastian. He's like, you know, I know Sebastian really well. I know him better than anybody else. And he's actually a really good guy and he's never hurt anyone. And all these rumors, it's just bullshit. None of it is true. And Annette is listening to this guy because she knows him and she doesn't know that he has a reason to lie. And that was heartbreaking to me.
She trusts him.
Yeah, she trusts him. And that was that guy like manipulating their friendship because he even says, Annette, you know me. You've known me since we were kids. I hate the idea that somebody would weaponize a childhood friendship to like lie to someone. That was almost like, to me, that was almost the worst part of the movie. The worst manipulation.
And even with this glowing recommendation from her friend, Annette's still not willingly jumping for joy to be a possible conquest for Sebastian. She's still making him work for it.
First of all, Annette has a boyfriend who is apparently backpacking through Europe. And I have to say, for someone who has a boyfriend and for someone who has been warned about Sebastian being this like horned up fuckboy, Annette is going out of her way to spend time with him, which I don't think is a good move, girly.
It's not. And she is definitely going out of her way to spend time with him. She gets out of bed in like the middle of the night. I mean, granted, Sebastian does start blasting music and waking her up. But you know what? She does agree to go swimming with him. She could have just been like, no, I'm not going swimming with you. That's weird. But instead, she's like, okay, fine.
And you could tell that she finds him attractive. And you could see that she is intrigued by him because he's danger, right? Like, she is this chaste virgin and he is this bad boy. He's this flame and she's this little moth.
You know what? She's starting to feel some stuff. Okay, these deep feelings she didn't think that she was capable of feeling at this age.
Horniness.
Yes.
I mean, that's all it is at this point.
You know what? She's starting to get some down low woes. She's starting to feel some tinglies.
The basement is quivering. It's a 2.0 earthquake, baby.
she is definitely starting to feel some things around Sebastian. And she's like, I have to go. Bye.
Yeah, she just leaves. Yeah. Don't you think that as a teenage girl, going swimming alone at night with this guy that you obviously find a little attractive and obviously is attracted to you because Sebastian has been flirting with her. Don't you feel like it was inappropriate of her? Like, straight to jail. She has a boyfriend and she's putting herself in a very precarious situation.
Yeah, honestly, you might as well have just already had sex with him. You guys would be married in some cultures.
No, for sure. Like in the 1800s, you couldn't be alone in a pool with a man. That's your husband now, babes. That's it. It's like Taylor Swift said, what if he wrote mine on my upper thigh only in my mind? Is that cheating? Yes, it is. It's called emotional affair.
Oh, that's an emotional affair, baby. In case you guys haven't put it together, we are damaged by the torture pose department, okay?
We are damaged.
We listened to it and then we had to take a break.
Yeah.
And then we had to go back and listen to it again.
I took 3 breaks listening to the album. It sounds dramatic, but it felt like a body slam. It felt like an emotional body slam. It was a lot.
You know, part of me kind of wanted to not take my Lexapro so I could feel it totally.
Girly pop. Girly pop. That's girl bossing right into the toaster bath. My Lexapro wasn't enough, girl. It was like straining. My Lexapro was like holding that boulder up. It was struggling.
I did not stop taking the Lexapro to get the full experience of the torture poets department. I got to down bad and I was like, listen, I'm going to ruin my fucking life. I'm going to divorce my husband just so I can actually be crying at the gym. Anyways, so while Sebastian is taking, you know, his midnight swims with Annette, we have Catherine who's made out with Cecile. Catherine's found out that Ronald, the music teacher, has been writing Cecile love letters. And do you know where Cecile's been keeping these love letters? Under her dollhouse. Girl, it's weird.
It is weird because, again, she's so infantilized. But then, okay, so we don't know what is in these letters. And it's a little weird too, because we don't see the music teacher acting on his attraction of Cecile, but we do see him pining after her because she is very thoughtlessly sexual. Cecile is that accidentally sexual girl.
Even more so than normal, because she does act like a 9-year-old.
So uncomfy.
Catherine goes, oh my God, make copies of the letters and bring them to me and I will help you draft a reply to him. I'm so good with words.
And I don't understand the motivation here, because Catherine turns around and goes to Cecile's mom and says, hey, I didn't want to say anything, but Cecile is having an inappropriate relationship with her music teacher and this is where she hides the letters. Go find them. And like, why would Catherine do this? Wasn't the whole goal for her to corrupt Cecile? And isn't it easier to corrupt Cecile when someone already wants her that way?
You would think so, but I honestly think that Catherine at this point is just like Sebastian is and is bored. So now she needs to ruin somebody's life.
Oh my gosh.
Catherine tells Cecile's mother. Cecile's mother confronts Ronald, the music teacher, and fires him. And then Sebastian and Catherine work together. They confront Ronald on his way out of the apartment. And they're like, hey, we know that you and Cecile have something special. You should write Cecile a letter and then we'll make sure she gets it.
The whole letter from the music teacher was just a lure. It was just bait to get Cecile to go to their place, because what they actually want to do, and Sebastian questions Catherine on this, but Catherine's actual plan, she wants Sebastian to sleep with Cecile. She wants Sebastian to corrupt Cecile. It's almost like Sebastian is Catherine's penis for hire or something.
I know, it's gross. He's like a little gigolo. So Sebastian ends up taking some pictures of Cecile and then he's like, I want to kiss you. And he's like, I want to kiss you down there.
Yes.
And the next day, Catherine goes over to see Cecile and Cecile's like, I need to talk to you. Something happened, but I'm not sure if I should say anything because it involves your brother. He took advantage of me. Catherine's pretending to be concerned. She's like, so he like raped you? And Cecile says, no, he like kissed me down there. And then like there was like this explosion and it felt like really good.
Again, the whole infantilized description of a sexual experience is so gross. But yes, essentially Cecile is very immature, very confused by the sexual experience. And it's Catherine who has to tell her, Cecile, you had an orgasm. You are a woman now, as if that's what makes you a woman. Catherine basically applauds Cecile, and then she goes on to encourage Cecile to be as slutty as possible.
Yeah, so Catherine says, I want you to think of Sebastian as a tutor. Let Sebastian show you all of the things, and then you can take all the things you learn back to Ronald and show him that you're not a prude. Catherine says, everyone does it, just nobody talks about it.
Hey, girly pop, this is what we do. We make out with our friends and we sleep with guys for practice. That's totally normal.
Yeah. And that's exactly what Cecile starts to do. She starts sleeping with Sebastian, okay? And Sebastian is so mean to her.
He shoves her off of him and she goes flying off the bed. It was really terrible.
Palm to forehead, he just like shoves her off the bed.
The whole movie, Sebastian is writing in a journal, right? Because you just know he thinks he's so tortured and interesting, and he's probably writing like soliloquies in his journal.
Straight from the tortured poet's department.
Straight from the tortured poet's department. It's a wonder he doesn't have a typewriter.
You know what? He probably does somewhere. To be completely honest, he's so perverted, he probably just put his dick in it.
In the typewriter?
Yeah. So while Sebastian has taken sort of the side quest to help Catherine in her quest of corruption for Cecile, he still has his own quest of corruption to seduce Annette.
Yeah.
And he is doing that by, maybe I should start taking an interest in the things that she likes.
Sebastian agrees to go with Annette to this old people's home and take on a shift, I guess, as a volunteer or whatever. And Sebastian is miserable. But when Annette and Sebastian are driving back home, he's trying to pretend that he had a great time because he loves giving back to the community.
Annette is just like, no, you didn't. And she finally gets Sebastian to agree. No, I actually had a terrible time. Mm-hmm. I hated that. And that makes me a bad person.
Yeah.
Annette's like, no, it doesn't. Like, sometimes giving back to the community doesn't give you the warm fuzzies and make you feel good inside. And that's okay.
Now that I'm thinking about it, I feel like Annette is the only one that really sees Sebastian, because she sees that he's bullshit. Like, really, his persona is all bullshit. And she tells him, like, you can laugh once in a while. You can act silly. A lot of the times, these people who think that they are so tortured and interesting, they think joy is below them. They think joy is for the peasants. And honestly, isn't that what the Titanic showed us? The people in the third class were having a freaking time of their lives at the parties, and the people in first class looked miserable as hell.
Yeah. And you know what? Maybe joy is for peasants, but I'd rather be a peasant.
That's a sad thing, right? To think that you have to go through life not being joyful because it's not classy to be joyful. That's so bizarre.
Why isn't it classy to be joyful? Like, why can't you be rich and happy? I don't understand it. At what point does money start hindering your happiness?
Wouldn't we love to find out? Again, please. It's for science.
It's for science.
Yeah, so there is this cute scene of Annette and Sebastian driving back from the old people's home. Annette starts making silly faces because she's trying to make Sebastian laugh for what apparently is the first time in his life.
He's definitely a little uncomfortable with it. Then he gets kind of mad, not like really mad, but he's like, ha, stop it.
It's such a toddler thing to do, to be like upset that someone's making you laugh.
Yeah. And she keeps going like, it's okay, you can laugh. And she just keeps going. And then she actually grabs his hand and then they hold hands on the way back. And I think this is really the moment where he started catching feelings. And I do honestly believe that Sebastian caught feelings.
I mean, we learned later that her making him laugh was like a big deal, which again, I am just rolling my eyes, right? Because he's such an edgelord and he doesn't laugh and joy is beneath him. But here comes this girl and makes him laugh, and that's it. Now he's falling for her. So Sebastian goes to Annette's room that night, and he came in there to tell her that he's leaving. He's not going to be at his aunt's house anymore, and that she's a hypocrite because she's playing games with him. And he says, you preach all the time about waiting for love, and here it is in front of you, and you're turning your back on it. and that he can't stand her games anymore, that she's hot and cold.
She's like, I don't trust myself around you. He's just like, no, I can't do this, you know, whatever. And he's breaking up with her, but like they're not together.
To be fair, they did make out a little bit earlier in the movie. They did make out and he came on really hot and heavy and she pushed him away. So every time she rejects him, it's like this deep wound for him.
Okay, well, baby, Sebastian, I'm sorry. I hate to break it to you, but like you can make out and kiss and stuff without fucking.
Yeah.
Like you do know that, right? Like.
But yeah, he calls her a hypocrite. And I would just want to point out, he's not even saying, I love you. He's saying, you preach about waiting for love. Here it is right in front of you. And it's like, that's not the same thing. Like, that's not you saying you love her.
He could be saying, like, I love the idea of getting in your pants. You know, I love the idea of pursuing you. You know what? He could be saying he loves a lot of things. He's not saying, I love you.
Context is important here, but I think him calling her a hypocrite really lands with Annette because she is really self-righteous. She wants to walk the talk. She wants to do what she preaches, right? So I think he really got through her armor there.
As Sebastian's getting ready to leave after he's like broke up with her, even though they're not together, Annette stops him. Annette has Sebastian sandwiched between her and the door, and she reaches around him and locks the door. And you know what that means? Locking the door is code for bow chicka wow wow.
Bow bow chicka wow wow.
Annette is willing to sleep with him right now, okay? She lets him, like, they start making out. They start getting kind of hot and heavy. He picks her up and takes her back to her bed. She starts to unbutton his pants. He stops her.
He says, I'm sorry, I can't, and leaves her room. She looks humiliated. To be fair, that is really humiliating because she was offering herself up on a silver platter and he was like, I'm good, thanks. In a really tortured way, but whatever.
The next day, Annette packs her shit and leaves.
Sebastian found out that Annette left to go stay with friends. So he calls their mutual friend because he thinks that's where she went.
And he's like, hey, man, maybe just let her go. And Sebastian's like, hey, do you want your dad to know that you like to diddle dudes? Tell me where she is. And the guy's like, all right, she's going to these people's houses. And here's what time her train leaves.
Sebastian goes to Penn Station. Annette gets on the escalator to go up. And as she's going up the escalator, you could see him waiting at the top of the escalators. And the way this was the most romantic scene I had ever seen in 1999, just literally just a man doing the bare minimum of showing up. I was like, that's romance.
Listen, I thought he looked like a corpse. I honestly thought he looked like he should have a noose around his neck, like hanging.
The whole movie, his vibes are creepy. That's the thing, to where like the performance is very slimy and icky. And it's strange to me that someone like Annette would fall for him.
Yeah, it is so slimy and icky. I hate it.
Mm-hmm. Annette, much like me in 1999, she was impressed by him showing up. She says, I'm impressed. And he says, I'm in love. And I was like, that's cute. I like that. That's cute.
Okay, so that was kind of cute. I can't lie. But they start kissing. I mean, they were going to town on kissing right there in the middle of Penn Station. Mm-hmm. And then he takes her, I don't know where.
I think it's back to his place.
They have sex. And you know what? He's being considerate. He's being kind. You can tell that it's new for him being a decent human being. Probably hasn't done it much before.
Yeah. It's a very like a sensual scene of them getting hot and heavy. And it does feel romantic a little bit in the way he seems to care about her enjoying it. It's not just mindless.
It's not mindless. You can definitely see that he has caught feelings. You know what? So maybe when he says, I'm in love, like maybe he wasn't 100% like delusional. I think he definitely has some feelings there. Is it love? I don't think so. Mm-hmm. Are they feelings outside of lust? I think so.
Yeah.
I think he's in like with her. I think he's definitely in like with her.
Is this what it feels like to like mildly respect a woman?
Yeah. Is this what it feels like to mildly respect a woman? It is, Sebastian. It is. And so, you know what? We think this might be the happily ever after for Sebastian and Annette. But we are wrong because we forgot that Catherine existed for a split second. We forgot that Catherine existed.
We did forget Catherine exists because the next morning, Sebastian puts Annette in a town car to go off and stay with the friends that she was going to go stay with. And who's looking over on the balcony like a fucking villain? The camera zooms in on Catherine.
Catherine is not happy that her stepbrother just had sex with somebody that wasn't Catherine.
She had him have sex with Cecile. She wasn't jealous of that. But you could feel the jealousy coming from Catherine because she knows that Sebastian has legitimate feelings for Annette.
Yes. So later that day, Sebastian is walking down the hallway and he hears Catherine obviously having sex with someone, and she's being loud. She's making a production, and Sebastian's like, obviously she is looking for an audience. So he knocks. He comes in. She's having sex with Ronald, the music teacher, and Ronald leaves. Catherine goes, so I assume you've come to make arrangements.
He won the bet, so she assumes that he is running in to collect the ultimate prize because Catherine sees herself as like the ultimate trophy.
Yeah. And he's like, nah.
Yeah, he turns her down. This guy's turning everything down. I mean, it's raining punani. He's like, no thanks.
And you know what? Catherine just can't let that shit slide.
You could see how his rejection of her just really rattles her to the core, because it feels like this is like a power that she has flexed. Their entire relationship is the fact that he wants her, and now he doesn't want her anymore. So, you know, it's time for her to burn everything to the ground.
Yeah, and that's literally exactly what she does. So music teacher Ronald goes back to Cecile. Mm-hmm. And then we have Sebastian, who goes to break up with Annette because Catherine has gotten in his head to make him think you are unworthy mm-hmm. of literally anything in life. You don't deserve anything that makes you happy.
Catherine takes this time to tell Sebastian, like, are you serious right now? You think that you have changed? Like, you think that in a couple days that you've known this girl, because it's been literal days. She's like, you think you're a brand new person? Like, what's going to happen when school starts up again? And she's the headmaster's daughter and everyone knows your reputation. Like, do you think you guys are going to live happily ever after? Catherine's like, you are twisted like me. Like, you're not part of that sunny, cute world. You're part of this dark underbelly of society.
Yeah. And Sebastian is like, yeah, you right. And so he goes and he breaks up with Annette. And he's essentially just like, he gives her the good old, it's not you, it's me speech. And at first, Annette's confused.
She doesn't believe it.
Yeah, she doesn't believe it. And he just keeps going. He doesn't reiterate or clarify anything. He just continues with his speech.
It's terrible because Sebastian goes to Annette and at first he's putting no energy into breaking up with her. He's just saying, we can't date anymore. It's not you, it's me. And the more she doesn't believe him, the like crueler he gets. He starts saying like worse and worse things.
Yeah. Listen, he has to say terrible things to her.
It's like he's putting down a golden retriever. It's really, really hard to watch because she's like this golden retriever. Like, no, you love me. I know you love me. You said it. I believe you.
Yeah. And he's just like, no, I don't. You're going to the pound.
He says to her, this was the final nail where she couldn't forgive it. He said, I just wanted to know what you were like in bed.
Yeah. And that was really unforgivable for her. She screams at him to get out. He goes home and Catherine's like, it's you and me now. You know, we're together. We're going to fuck. And Sebastian's still like, no. Mm-hmm. Catherine is very upset and Sebastian is hurt because he did have legitimate feelings, I think, for Annette.
Right.
So he's like, is this sadness?
Yeah. When Sebastian goes back to Catherine to essentially tell her that he broke things off, she does her villain monologue story and she essentially says, oh, good, you really were in love with her. And it just amused me to make you not believe it. And she even says, you're a little toy, Sebastian. You just do everything I tell you to do. And it's the saddest thing ever. And it's like, it's kind of heartbreaking because it's true.
Yeah.
Like, it really is true. She has pulled his strings the whole movie.
Yeah, and this breaks something in Sebastian mentally, emotionally. This breaks something in Sebastian, and he decides that the best way he can explain how he's feeling and the things he wants to say to Annette is by giving her his journal that he painstakingly writes in. He sends it to Annette. he wants her to have an understanding of him that he is unable to articulate with words. And this journal is not words. This journal is his innermost thoughts. And so he's like, what better way to explain it to her than to give her my innermost thoughts? So he sends her his journal for her to read all of it.
And it has all of the twisted little games that him and Catherine would play, all the people that they screwed over and manipulated. It has their entire playbook in there, including the bet that they made for him to take Annette's virginity. And then Sebastian goes on a sad boy walk.
He does. He goes on a sad boy walk in a trench coat through New York City. And Catherine can't let that shit slide. And so she calls Ronald and she's like, I don't know what to do right now. Sebastian hit me and then he left and I'm just so scared. And so Ronald's like, all right, I'll be right there. So Ronald is on his way to Catherine's house. Sebastian is out wandering the streets in New York City.
He had just left. Yeah.
He had just left. And so their paths collide while they're out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ronald is pissed because Catherine also told Ronald that Sebastian took advantage of Cecile. So the moment he sees Sebastian just doing his sad boy walk, Ronald goes in.
Yeah, Ronald goes in and he's like, what's good, scrawny boy? And just starts beating the shit out of him. Mm-hmm. And Sebastian is confused.
He's so confused.
He doesn't know what's going on. He doesn't know why this guy is just beating his ass, all right? And then Annette had just finished reading the journal. And so she's on her way to go see Sebastian. She sees Ronald and Sebastian fighting in the street. She tries to break up the fight. And in the scuffle, she gets thrown off of the men into the street. Sebastian sees that she's in the road and that a taxi is coming for her. He runs into the road and he flings her out of the way.
Yeah.
Just in time for him to be hit by a taxi.
Yeah, he gets hit. He cracks the windshield, rolls off, falls on the ground. And listen, I don't mean to be an insensitive bitch here, but it really didn't look that bad. But we cut to a funeral scene. So it's just like,
you know what? So at about 25% into this movie, I sent Rose a message that says, I've never wanted a character to be hit by a car more than I do Sebastian.
Oh my God. And you didn't know it was going to happen.
And I didn't know it was going to happen. And then I get to the end of this and he gets hit by a car and dies. And I'm like, oof, did I do that?
Manifestation, babes. It was interesting you said car and not bus or semi-truck. You know what I mean? You specifically, it's a wonder you didn't say taxi. But yeah, I don't know, like looking at that scene, I don't mean to be a bitch, but I feel like it didn't look that serious for it to cut to a funeral scene.
Like, did nobody take you to a hospital?
It looked like he should have had a couple cracked ribs at the worst. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, well, so here's the thing. Was he involved in any substances like Catherine was?
Because we do see throughout the movie, this is really adds to the edginess of the movie. Catherine walks around with a rosary, like this pious Catholic girl, but it's really a Coke spoon container.
Yeah, it's like a little, inside the cross, it like opens up and there's like a little spoon for her cocaine.
Yeah, just Catholic girly things, you know? But how did he die though?
Honestly, I don't think they called anybody. I think they just kind of accepted that Sebastian was gonna die.
He lands so softly on that pavement. He got hit at like 15 miles an hour, cracks the windshield, falls into the pavement, and they're like, he's dead, he's gone. And the bystanders are probably like, should we call 911? No. No one call anybody. It's fine. He's gone. Just let him go.
Honestly, I think that's what happened.
Yeah. And I mean, he for sure dies because the next scene, it's not a funeral. It's a memorial. It's like the first day of school and they're having like a memorial service for Sebastian.
And it's being presided over by the new principal of or the new headmaster of the school, which is weird, but whatever. So there's this awkward bathroom interaction between Catherine and Annette where they act like they don't fucking know each other.
Yeah, and they both know each other. They've never really met, but they know of each other because Annette read the diary. So she knows everything about Catherine. And obviously Catherine was in on the bet and knows everything about Annette. But they do. They act like they have no idea who the other person is.
And it's so fucking weird. But then Catherine goes and she starts giving a speech about her brother.
Do you notice how Catherine made the whole eulogy about about her. She was so, it was so cringe because she was just like, as student body president, like she was just like listing out her resume. And I just have to wonder, did she even love him? Like, did she even care about him? Like, how badly of a sociopath is she?
I honestly don't think she even really liked him.
She is a monster. But yeah, as Catherine is giving this speech, a girl runs up the aisle of the church and whispers something, and then whispers start to spread throughout the crowd, and all of the students get up and go outside. Catherine is in the middle of her speech that's praising herself, and she's getting pissed.
Yeah, and she's like, does nobody have any respect? Baby, better get that word out your fucking mouth.
Keep that word out your motherfucking mouth.
She stomps her attitude little self outside, and she sees this group of people reading this.
It's a spiral bound book.
Yeah, this little spiral bound book. And she's like, what the fuck? What is that? And people are just staring at her, like the loathing in these people's eyes as they stare at her. And then Cecile comes over with a stack of these in her hand and hands Catherine a copy. And on the front, it says Cruel Intentions, The Journal of Sebastian.
Yeah. So it seems that Annette had copies of this, not just printed, but bound. Let me tell you, do you know how expensive that is to get that done? This is rich kid shit, okay? We did not have the money to bully people like this in the 90s, all right? The budget wasn't there for this type of shenanigans.
No, if you wanted to write shit about somebody, you had to do it on a bathroom stall.
Exactly. And then you had to pray that they would go pee in that exact stall.
Or that somebody they knew peed in that stall and tell them about it. And then it was only there until like enough people shit talked in that bathroom stall to where they painted over it.
Right. The administration would find out and paint over it. Yeah. It was hard, man. We didn't have a budget like this to have this material printed and bound and then distributed.
Yeah. You know, that's gone by the wayside. They don't write on bathroom stalls anymore.
Oh. So now everyone is reading Sebastian's journal that has pictures of Catherine and her necklace that has cocaine in it. And he's basically, he spilled all of Catherine's secrets because he knew her like no one else knew her. And we should point out that Catherine had a really good reputation. Everyone thought she was like this perfect student. She was the student body president. She had a really good reputation.
The headmaster got a hold of a copy of this and he just walks outside, grabs her arm, pulls her necklace, and then opens it up. Cocaine goes everywhere. Yes. Catherine's parents, for the first time the whole fucking movie, are right behind the headmaster, just looking at her, just shaking their head.
Yeah, it's funny. I didn't even realize those were her parents because they literally have never shown up in the movie. I thought it was just two bystanders.
Not literally this whole movie. Only one adult to be seen the whole fucking movie. And that was Cecile's mother.
Cecile's mother, yeah. So, okay, I understand that Annette wanted to bury Catherine, right? Because Catherine is a bad person. Uh-huh. This is the villain being taken down. We love it. However, was it appropriate for her to interrupt the funeral to do this?
Honestly, I think Sebastian would have loved it.
Actually, you're right. You're right. I think he would have loved it. This is kind of up his alley.
I think Sebastian would have loved it. And then we end the movie with Annette driving off in Sebastian's car. Did she just take it?
I feel like that's not how it works, girly pop. You don't just get to commandeer your boyfriend's estate. There's a procedure to these things.
I think she just took it.
Yeah.
She just took it and then she has his journal in the passenger seat.
It's mirroring the first shot of the movie because the first shot of the movie is Sebastian driving down with his journal beside him. And then the last scene is Annette driving out of the city with his journal beside her.
Yeah. But I still have questions. Like, did you just take it?
Call the police. Yeah, listen, rich people, debauchery is, it's always fun to witness. And it looks miserable. I have not seen a movie or TV show depict Upper East Side teenagers in anything less than like a dark, dubious, unhappy, tormented way. It's kind of sad. It really makes me wonder if that's the reality. Like, where does this come from? Because sometimes Hollywood highlights the truth and sometimes they completely warp it. Like, sometimes they create a stereotype that's not true. So I wonder which one it is here.
Well, wait a minute. Is this fake? So we don't want to be one of them. You know what I'm saying?
Oh my God. They're trying to gaslight us into thinking that, like, you don't want this money. You don't want all of this. You don't want, look how miserable we are.
Yeah.
Dude.
Do you know what though? You're onto something, because there is this thing that people have with money where it's like money changes people. Money makes people bad. There is this belief among us, the peasants, that somehow having too much money is bad. But it's like, where does that come from? It does come from Hollywood and witnessing miserable rich people. We're on to you. Mm. We're on to you, Hollywood.
Here's the thing. I think you have to be poor before you can be rich. So you understand the value. Mm-hmm. You can't just have all this money and then just start shopping at Whole Foods and Erewhon. You know what I mean? You have to keep going to Aldi.
These are important issues we should be lobbying Congress for.
It's so, you know what? That's what it is. Your blood can't change. You have to keep going to Aldi so your body still thinks it's poor.
Mm. Oh my God. But just like those ritzy grocery stores, they just hit different, girl. But anyway, the teapot is empty for today.
Don't worry. More is brewing it on the way. We'll be back next week with another episode.
See you next time.
Bye.